We rolling.
I really, ugh. Ever since he did what he did to Danny Lay, I just can't get with it. I'm having such a hard time. Like, you don't do that to your baby mama.
Yeah, he was kind of raw with that one.
I don't know of any of the other, like, they may be, like, the baby mamas will usually be the ones that are like, F you blah, 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 you don't pay no support. But, like, for the most part, these baby daddies aren't like, fucking whore ass bitch, like, Jesus Christ. And she wasn't even, I don't think.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry, distraction. I do love that song, though. And I really wish he didn't do that, because I feel like he would have ridden that. He would have probably been on, like, a Drake train. You know what I mean?
Baby on a Drake train?
No. What I'm saying is like, the way that, yeah. Listen, to this day, I love the music that the baby puts out. I love it, but I just morally, I'm a baby mama.
But he has no difference in his delivery, though. I love the baby too, but
I love everything.
You can't a Drake train.
Anybody can make that. You feel me?
Anybody can make that.
I guess you're right.
And
I just feel like he would have lasted. He would have been like the beat king of, you know what I mean? Like all, like that the ratchet hood king of ratchetness. And who doesn't love Ratchet?
I get what direction you're trying to go.
I'm just saying.
But the hood, you can't. Some niggas just like being, you know, they can't get the hood out of them. So you can't. No, for real. And so when you get put on big stages like that and things like, I mean, it was with what he said on stage, like
what he do? At the
festivals, like
What did he say?
He was calling people faggots and stuff. And
babe, you can't say that word.
He said it, not me.
Oh, okay.
See? My point exactly.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, you got to understand what stages you're on and what's politically correct and what's not and what's accepted. And then, like, it's different when you're up there, though.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, like, your music has to be, like, I mean.
Don't get me wrong. But be like, who you want to be.
But, like.
But.
Never mind. I'm not going to go that direction, but.
What?
Look, I'm just raising a question.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean that artists that use the N-word in music are not making all-inclusive music? Because to him, that's not a bad word. To him, that's not a bad word. Or maybe he knows what it means, but it's not, he doesn't say that word to hurt anybody's feelings. Kind of like the same way there's some white people out there that say it with no malintent, i.e. the girl that I, you know, joked into, she played herself, but that one, like, she wasn't saying that to be mean or, but does that mean that using the N-word in music is not all-inclusive? Because
the N-word is a lot different than the F-word.
I understand. No, they're not. Gay man used it between him and another gay man, people would laugh. I've seen it. I literally see it all the time. One of my best friends, John Michael, loved the man to death, but he be calling people the F word all the time. And no one's going to bat an eye because he's gay. And that's quote unquote, like I don't know. Look, I'm staying out of the politicalness but that's
if the baby was gay and he said the F word on stage, then it'd be all right.
I guess so. But all I'm trying to do is raise the question of, does that mean that artists that use the N word in their music, is that truly all inclusive music? The way that you just said, like, when you're up on stage, you have to be inclusive with people. I'm not taking a side. I literally don't even take a side. I'm just saying I don't like the baby because of what he did to his baby mama.
I never said that you have to be inclusive. I never said that. I said you have to be politically correct, and I'm using
which would
that word
mean
loosely.
To be politically, what is to be politically correct? Because politically correct, politically correct is using people by their nouns that they want you and how they identify. That's politically correct. So you're right. He has to be politically correct, which means he has to be inclusive and follow the rules of inclusivity in order to be politically correct. Yo, we are on such a tangent right now.
We ain't even.
But
like,
but I'm right. But I, I'm sorry. Show. Not that I'm right.
We ain't even open the show.
I know. I know.
What are we? What podcast?
I'm
is this?
So sorry. I'm like, so yo, sorry.
What are we listening to?
I know. Well, you know, I smoked right before this, so you know me. I'll be.
Can you turn me down a little bit?
Yeah. Yeah, you're too, right?
Yeah. You might need to be turned down too.
I think so too.
There you go. All
right. We yelling at people right now. Who is just yelling into the mics at each other, at everybody?
Welcome to our home.
Look, and again, let me make sure everybody knows.
Welcome to our dining room.
I do not take, obviously, like, I don't take, look, I just live my life at home. I go and I make my money. We go and we take our trips. We get married. We having fun. That's what I care about. All this political correctness, I'm going to do whatever it is that is not going to hurt anyone's feelings because I don't want anybody to hurt my feelings.
Right.
So that's me. That's where I stand on that. I'm just raising the question that if artists that use the N-word in their music can't say, you know, whatever other word, blah, 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 blah. Like, does that mean, like, is it really all inclusive? Does that, because white people can't say those. To me, like, I'm not going to be in the club, like, I could never. Even if everybody deemed, you know, that word's not even a big deal anymore. I'm still, y'all not going to catch me.
All right, here's the difference in this particular situation that we talked about. Okay. That we're talking about. The baby was on stage talking to somebody directly. He wasn't using.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay, you're right. I'm asking. No, I actually okay. kind of don't. All I know is that he said like a derogatory word, right. The F word.
And he was talking to somebody directly.
Not fuck either.
In the crowd, you know what I'm saying? So that's different.
But what, I mean, like he just picked him out and like just started or
it was,
what?
It was something, I mean, I forgot exactly what happened. Something that he was getting heckled or something like that. And he's like,
heckled?
I ain't with that gay shit, you faggot. Something like that.
Just gotta start saying the F word.
Right,
it's making
you know what
me
saying?
Uncomfortable every time.
Oh, I mean, I'm just quoting.
You're right. No, I know. I know you. I know. I'm just saying. Just
wow.
For the people listening.
It's really
that's how politically correct I'm trying to be.
Oh, okay. All right, well, anyway.
Now, you can say the N-word all you want, but.
He was directing it towards somebody. That's.
But do you think he meant it as, like, was he just trying to call him, like, a bitch? You know what I mean? Like, you can call somebody a bitch, even though that's a word that you are not supposed to call a woman and blah, blah, blah. I use it to my female friends because I love them. Like, that's, I get it. But was he saying that word as, like, to mean...
It don't matter. When you're on stage and in front of
you be calling bitches, but now that the F word is in play, now it matters. You feel
damn,
me?
We're getting deep.
We are getting deep because I I really, really, really try to like see it from all points. Honestly. I'm not going to do anything that hurts anybody's feelings or offends anybody because, like, if I know it's going to offend people, I'm not going to, like, that to me is a waste of my time. I'd be getting myself into situations I don't care to be in, I don't want to be in. Like, that's not right. But again, I just want to know. I want other right. Viewpoints on that. Like, right. Because... At the end of the day, if I don't know, whatever. I'm not saying everybody should be able to say anything, whatever. That's not what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I'm just raising the question again for the fifth time. Would that mean that artists that use the N-word are not making all-inclusive music since everybody can't listen to it? It's like Christian music, right? Like, sure, you make it for everybody. But you're catering to an audience.
Right.
So I just...
Look, man, I don't know.
All right. You are not the person to have this conversation with.
I really...
Who should I have this conversation
tapping out.
With? I need a call.
Probably a gay man. That's
why not a rapper?
And a rapper. That was going to say that. Put them...
I need a gay man and a rapper. Get over here. Jesus. Immediately. I don't know what... What did we... Start on This has nothing to do with what I'm trying to talk about. I'm trying to talk about something very serious.
First of all, who are we?
We still haven't done that?
No.
Hey, everybody. My name is Alexa, also known as Alexa the Great on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my Canamon podcast. And the way that this podcast came about was viral video that went around and people wanted to hear the story. And now we just talk about a bunch of nonsense and hope that everybody thinks it's funny or interesting. And that's where we're going with this.
Yeah.
And we do this. Nah, I'm not going to put that out there. I don't want to put that out there because I don't know who's listening.
Okay. All right. My name is Tony Styles. I am the fiance, the other half of the host. And the engineer and the producer and the star.
He does everything. I just talk. I just come up with the ideas and I'm like, let's talk about. And then he goes, okay, I'll do that on top of everything else. Sounds good.
Yep.
Yeah. That is like one that. Good like man. That.
Yep. That's how my life
so
goes.
So supportive.
I'm a yes man.
Oh, whatever. Yeah, right. Pff, I wish. Give me $100. Yeah, right. I had to pay him back today.
You're on point with that. You had to ask.
You're right. You didn't have to ask. But that's because I got my tax return from March.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, who gave me 60? I literally had to look up who sent me money. I had to look up what company it was that sent me money. And then it was, you know, some tax thing. So then I went to the IRS thing and it said it issued it. What's today? Thursday, Tuesday.
Well, you got money right now.
No,
man.
The fuck I don't.
You
I
got
get
money.
Guess
bro.
What the hell? No, I don't. I already told you too? Where. I already told you where it went,
I know,
and
that
it's
was
gone.
A
I got 200. I got a no. What? 1600 is not a lot.
I thought you were starting with the 660 something.
No,
boy, man.
Yo, I don't know what I'm
about to say, man.
That
would you
been,
got a kid to claim and everything. So,
hey, man. Yeah, I. To push that thing out my chocha. Yeah, I'm going to claim it on mine. Pay me back for all the trauma I done been through. That's my little money.
Got hush money.
Yeah, not hush money, but it's just my. Stop complaining. Just shut the fuck up. That's what that is. That's what that is. Because every tax return season, I'm not going to be complaining. I'm going to go get it. But this past tax return season, I didn't get it because I just got it yet 2 days ago. That's crazy.
Oh boy.
That's how backed up the government is. We're talking about nothing again.
Yeah.
I love this. Okay, so actually, can we please start? Thank you. I actually wanted to get into a little bit of personalness.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, with you. Because you know what? I don't think we really figured out like what our very first podcast had the ability of addressing. I think we were just addressing like our own story, which was the whole point of that, right?
Right.
But I think with that, you know, comes further experience rather than just like gaining custody of a child. But now there's like, I think it has the ability to bring awareness through your own personal experiences of how all of this stuff came to light.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually didn't tell him exactly what I was going to be doing, but I'm just going to be asking you a bunch of questions and I want you to answer them. And I want you to answer them with your own personal experience. And this is just going to be as a way of like, because it took you a long time to see what was going on. For those of you that didn't listen to the first podcast, the way we got custody of our 3-year-old daughter, who is not mine biologically, was basically, you know, her mom has an addiction. Who's calling? Oh, that's you. You might want to put your shit on Do Not Disturb.
Oh, my bad.
Sorry. So with that, I wanted to raise the, I kind of forgot where I left off, but I wanted to raise some questions on how you came through your own experience to figure out that there was an issue. I think there's, like, a lot of people don't realize how prominent addiction is in the world, especially things with, like, opioid addiction, right? Like, there's a 98% chance of relapse. There's not a lot of people that come back from that.
Right.
Or they may, right? But you just have to keep coming back from that. It's you know, quote, like a cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And people may be good for a long time, and then they relapse, and they're good for a long time, and then they relapse. Or, you know, they're starting to get clean, and they just can't get it done. And you know, it's just, that's what that 98% means. Not necessarily that people never get clean, just that there's the chance of relapse.
Right.
So I do want to, you know, say that about that. So it's actually really prominent in the world. It's pharmaceuticals are killing people.
Yeah.
Just through medications that they give to people.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, yep. at one point they're, you know, giving morphine. Like it's nothing. Like you get fentanyl in the hospital. It's a real thing. Like, they give you fentanyl. I mean, obviously, not in any situation. Like, depending on what's wrong with you, you get it. But that's still a medication that you can get. And there's people, even police officers, because they're having to find the stuff and they accidentally inhale it, and they're dropping like flies. Like, this stuff kills people left and right. And they lace it in everything. Ecstasy, cocaine, anything that can turn into a white powder, which is so weird to me. I can't do it. I can't do the powdered. Like, I feel like I'm eating bleach, like powder bleach.
Right.
That's what that makes my brain think. But if it turns into a white powder, it could possibly have fentanyl in it.
Right.
So, anyways, I know, and especially with just some of our own personal events that have come about, I wanted to ask you some questions about when you started to notice addiction. Like, what are characteristics of a person that, and you've looked it up, you've studied it, mm-hmm. you know, so it wasn't just, it's not just all your own personal experience, but things that you've looked up and have seen that there's a pattern with.
So, all right, so your question is, what are the characteristics?
Yeah, what were the characteristics you, that you...
In an addicted person.
Mm-hmm.
That
you noticed.
Number one is dishonesty.
Okay.
And it could be about the smallest thing. It could be about something insignificant, and you don't realize.
You're not gonna think twice on it.
Right. You're not gonna think twice about it. That's number one. Unrealistic patterns. Daily routines or patterns that you may see, as far as like where they're going, or hey, I have to go over here to this person's house or this area of town for this reason. I have to go here, and I have to go do something, and I gotta go all the way over there. I gotta drive across town, and you know, and I do this every Sunday, every two, three times a week, you know.
And there's no real reason why.
It doesn't make sense. Whatever the case. Okay, so for example, it could just be, hey, I'm gonna go see this friend. You know, I'm gonna go. All right, Sunday I'm gonna go see my friend. Sunday at noon I'm gonna see my friend. You know, that lives on the other side of town, but every Sunday. Every
yeah,
week.
I guess that's not normal.
Right, and why it could be the same time every week is you get paid, you know,
oh.
a certain day, you know, as soon as
an addict, have time off.
Yeah, or as soon as an addict gets money, whether it comes from them working or whatever, you know, some sort of a deposit from, you know, whatever, that's the first place they're going to go. So that's the first thing they're going to do. And it was, for me, it was clockwork. You know, this person got paid on Saturday, on Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon. They always had to go see their friends, just like, because it was a Sunday ritual, you know?
Yeah. That's totally not normal.
so
I never did that.
Yeah. And so,
I don't do that now.
And so for me,
sorry.
it was, you know, it was real. It was weird. It was like, damn, you really like her that much that she driving 45 minutes across, you know what I'm saying, across town to go see her, and, you know, like, just to go hang out for a couple hours and, you know, and then come right back. And then it was like, what? Okay. But that was the one of the first signs, one of the first things that I saw that was, all right, this is kind of weird, you know what I'm saying? And then it's a gang of other stuff that you will start to slowly notice. And this is somebody who is at the very beginning stages of addiction. It depending on what it is, depending on the substance, obviously it happens slow, especially if they're keeping it a secret and all of that, you know.
Oh yeah, I guess if they have nothing to hide, they're like, they don't care.
Right. And I'm particularly talking about opioids, you know, which are easy to hide. We're not talking about crack cocaine, you know what I'm saying?
Like, meth, you know, heroin.
We're talking about something you easily just slip into your mouth with a glass of water, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so it's very easy to hide, it's very easy to function off of. On a regular, you know, especially in the beginning, it's an internal feeling. There's no, at the beginning, or depending on how much you've taken, it's not a lot of debilitation.
Yeah.
And then it takes a while. It takes a certain, the tolerance level.
Yeah.
To start seeing the debilitation. You all right over there?
Dude, my allergies are killing me.
I see. Okay.
Don't put the camera on me.
I won't.
Dang.
Wow.
Jeez, I know. It's my eye, man.
Yeah.
And you know what? For some reason, I think it's something that, like, whenever I smoke, like, feelings are enhanced.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know how, like, scratching something that itches feels good?
Mm-hmm.
Well, my eyes are itchy because my allergies and I'm high, so it feels kind of good. Okay. Sorry. Okay. Now that we've addressed that.
Yeah. The next question, is that, did that answer your question?
So I mean, give us a little bit, if you could give me a little bit more, maybe what happens a little further down the line, like what do those patterns start to look like further down the line? Is it, I mean, like people just
then it's I mean, it depends on how close you are to the person, but then it's money, you know what I'm saying? It's just irrational things that happen that deal with money. Hey, I got paid yesterday, but I'm broke already tomorrow. I'm broke already today because I had to get gas, and it was like, you know.
Is gas that expensive?
Yeah, it was like, you know, it's just irrational explanations for not having money and needing money. And again, it's just going back to the dishonesty and how deep it really will go with an addict, because one lie begets another. And, you know, like an addict knows how to go, and they keep their stuff together. Like, they keep their lies in order. Like,
this is for a functioning addict that's trying to keep it secret.
Right. So functioning addict, that is out here in society, has a real job, has a career, you know, like, this is when it's starting to become an issue and disrupt their daily lives, is when, you know, financially they can't keep up.
Yeah.
When they can't keep up financially. You know, there's a lot of addicts that you know, I'll say in the medical field that, you know, doctors that function every day because whatever their, you know, addiction is, or however much money they have to spend on it,
it's not an issue for them.
It's not an issue for them,
yeah.
You know. And so they get to function every day.
Yeah.
They're full-blown addict, but they get to actually function every day because they can afford to.
Yeah.
But the one that loses control is the one that, you know, that that their addiction or the decisions that they make on a regular basis disrupt their daily life and their financial ability, yeah. You know, things like that. So, and then obviously it just, you know, the more control that they lose, the worse everything gets, you know.
So, and how did you confront that though, like how whenever you realized, well, when did you realize there was a problem, and then when did you confront the problem? You know, what did you say? Like, what do you say? Sorry, that was two questions. So when did you realize there was one and how did you address it?
So it's kind of crazy how you... I'll first say this. If you're a loved one of an addict, there's a number of steps in the feelings that you go through, right? I gotta look it up, but I forget the order of the steps.
Like denial being one.
Right. There's you're naive, right? Naive, you're angry, you're confused, you're like you're at one point you are enabling.
Yeah, because you don't think it's,
you know, and but these all go in. There's a certain order that you're in, of these stages that you're in, and you know these stages last you know a long time or whatever. And so for me, at the beginning, it was kind of like I didn't understand at first, or not that I was in denial. I remember some denial in the beginning. I remember some naiveness in the beginning. But I didn't think it was anywhere near how far it was, you know, how far in it was, or how bad it was, because it wasn't in my face.
Right.
And, you know, and I was crazy busy, you know, I had my own life, like, you know what I'm saying? So it just was hard to believe. But at the same, in the back of my mind, I'm like, no, something ain't right. Something ain't adding up. Something is like, this is still something going on. Like it's
just weird. Right. Just
yeah,
off.
It's just.
So it's a lot of intuition.
And then, you know, as you go through trying to fight it, and try to understand it, that's when you go through all those stages. Cause then you know, anger will set in because you're like, yo, you know, this ain't like you're not listening or you're not following the direct, like you're not doing what you need to do. Like, you know, and then it's, God, I wish I remember those stages, you know, then it's enabling because you, again, this is a loved one and you listen to what their excuse for their addictions, you know, and it could be anything. It could be blamed on a number of things that seem to make sense, seem to make some type of sense. Right. And it's like, oh, well, you're the victim. They make you an addict, make you think that they're the victim. And so then you want to help them and you're like, okay, all right, well, in order for you to get here and function, I'm going to have to give you money. I'm going to have to let you do.
And this is like, I'm assuming after jobs have been lost and stuff or like.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. 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 Of course.
Cause like, where's the income, you know?
Yeah. I mean, but when you, again, an addict is a master manipulator. You know, and especially when you know that's not them, that's not that person. When you feel like that something is just taking over that person and they're going to get out of it. And, it's, you know, you don't realize it's a cycle until you went through it a few times. You don't realize, right. No, it's a cycle. It's just going to come back. It's going to come back. You always think, oh, this is the last, this is the, all right, after this, you know, this person's good, they're going to be all right, they're overcoming this, it was a phase, and it was, you know, you swear that's what it is until you go through it a few times and you realize, oh, no, it's a cycle. There's going to be ups and downs, it's going to come back unless something major happens in that person's life to an addict, unless they hit, most of them have to hit rock bottom, as they say all the time, you know. But even then, it just, even rock bottom for an addict could just basically have them be sober for a longer amount of time before they relapse.
Right.
So yeah. Yeah, right?
Yeah, no, I'm over here trying to, like, look at my questions. Because I wrote a lot of this down. Because I remember whenever we first met, I had so many questions.
Mm-hmm.
I remember being like, how don't you see this? And, excuse me. How is this not all in your face? And how are you not? But I forget, or I was forgetting in the beginning that I was an outsider looking in. Mm-hmm. So all of the things that they're able to convince you of because you love them and you care about them and you just want them to be good, all of those things are gone. Those emotions are gone.
Right.
And you're not playing through emotions. You're playing through, what the fuck? That doesn't make any sense. Like, right. what do you mean? Like, this is I've never heard of this happen. Like, this isn't normal. You're able to see the things that are not normal because your normal is very different from an everyday person's normal. You're working based on the needs of somebody.
Right.
So I think what happens a lot of times is those of us that have never dealt with anybody who, or have never loved anybody that has an addiction and haven't dealt with it, you know, at a standpoint where you guys are close, we forget that a lot of these things are done through emotions, these decisions, this habit that, you know, keeps everyone around them a slave to it because you're doing something based on someone's needs so that they don't use.
Right. Yep.
Right? You know, like you're I don't know, what were some of the things that kind of, like, y'all did to avoid her? I mean, I remember you telling me, like, you had to limit it. Like, you were giving it to her because, again, like, withdrawals are a very mm-hmm. big thing.
Right.
So in order for her, I mean, how much, not how, I don't want any of those details, but what was it that you had to do in order to keep the withdrawals from happening?
So at one point there's weaning. You know what I'm saying? That was something that was widely suggested by psychiatrists or doctors or whatever.
But that's for an addict, or that's just for a normal person?
I mean,
that's getting kind of hooked, if you will.
If a normal person is getting hooked, then they're getting addicted. True, so yeah. I mean, like, that's like that with any drug that, you know, you should be taking less of, obviously. An addict is defined by somebody whose life is disrupted by their, you know, abnormal use of drugs, right? So, yes, this is after, you know, this is after being officially, you know, considered an addict. Yeah. Well, you know, some of the methods were weaning, and that meant, you know, still being allowed to go and buy, you know, if they needed to, because the weaning would take several weeks, you know?
Right.
And it's so many ways to manipulate, so many ways. Like, you can't watch somebody's every move.
Yeah.
You cannot be with them 24/7.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You can't. You got your own life. And for somebody to, and again, I would hear this when I was in this situation from other people who I, you know, was telling about my situation. They were like, man, I don't wish that on nobody. And talking about me. Talking about me being in my position.
They don't wish what you were going through on anybody.
Right, because they know that you're in a fucked up position. Because you with somebody that you care about, and you know if you just roll out, they're going to be fucked. They're going to be fucked, you know?
Yeah.
But
that's a lot of responsibility to hold on yourself.
Exactly. It fucks you up.
Yeah, because you feel like it's your responsibility to keep them from dying almost.
Exactly. Exactly.
Jeez.
You damn near keeping somebody alive, you know?
Yeah,
it fucks you up. You're grown ass fucking man, you know, trying to keep somebody else alive by, you know, not doing.
And by someone that doesn't seem to really want to be alive. I mean, if you're thinking about it, like, you know, that can kill you. So if you know it can kill you and you're still doing it,
Right.
Because it's good. Come on. No, there's not a single human in the world, I don't care who it is, addict or not, who doesn't know that drugs can kill you. Mm-hmm. Pharmaceuticals specifically can kill you.
Yep. But I mean, you don't think about that on the everyday.
Yeah.
You
don't, I guess.
It's, life is slowed down way, you know, way to the more day. Than that. Yeah, to the second, to the minute, you know. And it's, jeez, like, and that's what an addict's brain is like.
In the minute.
They need to get to the next minute. They're not worried about next year. They're not worried about a few years from now. They're worried about the next 10, 15, 20 minutes, next couple hours, next couple days, if that, you know.
Where they're going to sleep at night. If that's a worry,
yeah,
right?
When it gets to that point, yeah. You know, if you don't have enough support system, you know. It takes a toll on you. It takes a toll on you, and you got to be a strong enough person to deal with it, but you got to be even stronger to not deal with it. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You got to be even stronger to give up on it.
Dang.
Yep. Shit deep.
But I mean, at what point do you decide that?
When
your life is in shambles, yeah, or
yes,
like,
yes, when you realize your life has severely been affected and that it will be affected permanently, to some extent, then you say, "All right, fuck this." You gotta be done and never look back. Just never look back. And obviously that's what it was for me. You know, you say, "All right, this is fucking it. This is it. Like, I'm not, there's nothing else that I'm doing. I'm not gonna be vulnerable anymore. I'm not going to sacrifice anymore. I'm done. I'm out." Whatever your relationship is, blood, parent, all that shit, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, parents have to make that tough decision too.
Yeah, they do all the time too.
You know, and in this particular case, you know, the parents have yet to make that decision.
Yeah.
You know,
and it kills people.
Yeah, it does. It.
It kills other people with the stress and the.
I feel sorry for the people because you watch shows and shit like that, and you see the people who have to deal with an addict in their home, and they're like, "Man, fuck this life! I hate this shit." Like,
they don't want to go home,
right?
Because then you're also like the next person that knocks on your door, you're like, "Well, there's the police telling me they're dead.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They're not here, so who knows where they are?"
Right.
That's got to be really intense.
Yep.
That's really scary. So, so you give up. Well, before you give up, right? Like, what were some of the things that you were saying? And I know, just because obviously I'm close to you, so, and you've told me everything, but what were some of the things that you were saying to try and get this person to realize, like, this is it. Like, you have to stop. Like, well, okay, actually, yeah, like, what were some of the things that you were doing that you were just like, you need to stop or I can't? And how long do you think you kept that up? Because a lot of the things, and we like to watch the shows, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
the intervention shows, and it's crazy how at some point, you know, people are like, "Okay, I'm done. But then they're not done.
Right.
And they go back and they try to help more, and it only enables, right?
Right.
So, because they do say, in order to stop helping an addict, or in order to kill the addiction, you have to stop helping it.
Right.
So how many times were you like, "Okay, I'm done. We're done. This is done. I can't do this." And then
that was
go back.
That was the crazy part, because I guess we were together for about a year and a half of, you know, realizing from when I, you know, kind of first realized it was an issue, and then trying to fix it, whether it was psychiatry, rehab.
Is that the, and that was something that you went through?
Yeah, of course. I was there for all of that. You know, smoking weed, you know, like just other, just whatever you could do to try to try to get them sober.
Curve the addiction.
Right.
So, or curve the craving, I guess.
Right. So that was about a year and a half of that while we were like just together. And of course that was rocky because of the situation. And then once it became, all right, look, we not together. We fuck this relationship, blah, 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 blah.
It's not what's helping you.
Right. It's clearly. Not right. You know what I'm saying? Then it was a really toxic and complicated off and on, because now I'm not, you know, I don't see this person every day. I'm going on about my life. I'm touring the fucking world. You know what I'm saying? I'm DJing. I'm all over. I'm flying out every week. But then I come home and, you know, you kind of catch up and you know, you talk and, you know, you figure out what's going on and you're still trying to help and trying to be there and you still have a relationship. You still
wrong.
Not a romantic relationship.
Regardless, a relationship period.
Right. You still are in contact with this person. You're still talking on the phone to this person. You know, it wasn't cut off all the way. It was just like, all right, we don't have this title. You know, and you know,
but we still doing everything that we was doing.
Off and on, yeah. Yeah. And that was the whole if anybody asked me. And I mean, people that know me will remember this part of my life. And, you know, they if they either saw us together or brung this person up, they was like, I thought y'all broke up. I thought y'all. And then, you know, my answer would always be, it's complicated. You know, it's fucking complicated. Like, it's complicated. I remember saying that a lot. It's complicated. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But everybody, you know, at least outside looking in and knowing, seeing me out, seeing me all over the place, say like, oh, no, you ain't, you know, you single, you know. But behind closed doors, like a dummy holding on, just, yeah. But holding on not to have my cake and eat it too. It was at that. It's different. It was a lot different than that. It was, again, me kind of being naive and thinking that one day things might have been better. And then at the same time, still trying to save this person. You know, still like, all right, like they're not gonna make it. Like. If I can try to save, if I can do something,
yeah,
just be there some way. But have your boundaries. Mm-hmm. Boundaries was a big thing. You know what I'm saying? It was, all right, I'm gonna set my boundaries. I'm gonna set my boundaries, and then I'm gonna be all right. Be able to live my life. Still kind of be there for this person. So, it was a lot. That, to answer your question. What did I say and how many times? I said a lot, and it was a lot. It was a lot of times that I said it.
Yeah.
It was a lot. It was, you know, but it wasn't. It was all over the place, though. It was loose.
Yeah. So whenever you started to notice that there were withdrawals, what was the intensity? What did it look like, and what was the intensity of those?
All right, withdrawals for this particular drug. I'm talking about opioids.
Excuse me.
Sure. So, RLS, restless leg syndrome.
What is that? You've told me that, and I don't know what the heck that is.
Restless leg syndrome.
Like you got to bounce your leg all the time? I don't know. I'm asking.
It's more so I can't sleep. It's more so insomnia. And not being able to sleep, and just being up all night.
What?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah. I mean, they call it restless leg syndrome, but I don't know what. I don't know if it just has to do with your legs or not, but it's more so it's one of them. Basically insomnia.
Okay.
And another one, it obviously is like, I think it's like diarrhea or something, you know, or something like that.
Yeah, I think what happens is your body starts to go through, like it rejects the things that are not pills in your body.
Right.
And it's something along those lines. I remember kind of learning about it, but it just tries to flush your system.
Yeah. And it takes immediate. Oh, there's like, it's cold sweats.
Like they're cold and sweating? Like shivering and sweating?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Cold sweats. That's a big enough. I mean, that's a normal withdrawal system for any sort of, like, even
most,
you
know, crack, drugs, like, yeah.
Yeah,
most drugs, yeah. Crack, but, damn. Yeah.
I just remember that. What's that one? New Jack City? You too young for that. Never.
Okay.
Anyway.
Thanks for that.
And that's most of that is the physical, but there's mental too.
So what was the mental?
The mental, it takes a little longer to kick in. The physical is all in the first week, and it'll go away though. It just depending on how strong the person is. If they go past that first week or two of those withdrawals, then the next withdrawals or the next thing that you deal with is the mental. And from what I remember, I may not be.
It's been a long time since you had to deal with this.
So I mean, I think it's obviously the urge. It's anxiety. It's a few other things that over the next several months that's even, I think it might even be contemplating suicide, you know.
Oh, suicidal thoughts. Yeah,
suicidal,
sure.
Suicidal thoughts. Yeah. It's those things that start to set in a couple of months, a few months after. So, I mean, there's, you know, and again, this is all stuff that I've, you know, have looked up and kind of experienced in my situation. Definitely experienced the physical multiple times.
Yeah.
Just because of all the times when it would try to, you know, cold turkey and
the different ways of
different way, yeah. Right, you know. Even trying Suboxone, which is a whole Suboxone is the alternate drug, something that
For addiction though, specifically, yeah.
Right. That you'll get prescribed.
And basically it's
prescribe.
Like it gives you the high, but it's not hard on your body. Is that what it is? I think it gives you, like, it stabilizes your body, it gives it what it's need chemically, but like it doesn't give you the high.
Right. You don't have
euphoria. Yeah. And so it makes you not want it.
Right. Right.
Or whatever. Something like that.
Yeah, but it's still addictive though. It's still addictive because,
well, yeah, because you're addicted to, all you're doing is transferring the addiction to something that's not gonna,
that's not as bad,
right? Or just takes away some of the symptoms, but it's not fixing anything.
I remember the term was like turning a bus when it came to switching from the opioids to the Suboxone. They said it was like turning a bus.
What is that? What does that mean?
So it just meant that it took a while for you to be able to convert it. I remember that term for some reason. It took a while for you to be able to convert from doing opioids to Suboxone, but you had to kind of do it slowly and like convert. So you still be on both.
Oh, shit.
You wean off of one and then slowly get onto the other.
Oh, shit.
Right.
I thought it was just like you jump on the pill and then, you know, you start your treatment or whatever.
Right. And so.
So at some point you might even feel the high from both. Or I don't know how.
Well, that's the hard part because then you gotta fight. You got to wean off of something that you know is euphoric.
Yeah.
And then you're taking this
Because your euphoria is now going down.
Right. And so, you know, you got to have the right supply. You got to, like, have the right will.
So it's just one pharmaceutical to get you addicted to the next pharmaceutical.
Exactly. And it's all all big pharma. It's all big business. It's all, you know.
Yeah, pharma, yeah.
And, I mean, people sell Suboxone on the street.
Yeah. Really?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Why?
Because an addict needs
something, drugs, something.
Because what? If you can't get an opioid that gives you the euphoria, you're gonna get something that doesn't give you withdrawals.
Suboxone is just to like suppress the withdrawals. Mm-hmm. But
for the most part, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So you're not fixing anything.
You're not fixing anything.
You always need it.
Right. Right.
Sounds like big pharma.
Right. Right. So it's like, you know, a drug dealer will sell you that too. It may not be as desirable, or, you know, if they're like, all right.
I wonder if it's cheaper.
Yeah, pretty sure it's cheaper, yeah.
Gotta be, right?
Pretty sure.
You know, it's probably expensive through.
I'm pretty sure it's cheaper. So it's like, you know, if drugs, they don't have that, then, you know, they got some, buyer. Well, here, I got some of these to hold you over till I get some more or something, you know.
Oh, yeah. Damn.
So it's pretty crazy.
That world is crazy.
The world is crazy. Don't get me wrong, I know nothing about the political part about it, like what's happening, what laws are being passed, anything like that, but I can't see that much can be happening. I can't see anything really happening about it because it's so much money and there's so many people that get prescribed pain pills, and it's so intertwined.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I mean, people go to the doctor for pain pills and they don't even got any pain.
Right.
They're like, my head hurts.
And there's so many doctors that.
And you know what would fix all that?
Yeah. Let's just get you a pain pill.
No.
What?
Well, that's what doctors are thinking, because doctors also get a kickback from all this stuff. Right. But what they don't want to do is they don't want to legalize cannabis, which can fix most of these fucking issues. Mm-hmm. Pain, headaches, you know, eating problems. But, you know, that's just me advocating a little bit. That's just me doing my part.
I feel you.
Yeah, no, big, like, pharmaceuticals are very scary. I'm no one really taught me about like pharmaceutical addiction. All I knew, like my first experience with pharmaceuticals, when I didn't really know that it was actually a pharmaceutical, was bars. Everybody called Xanax bars, and I just thought bars, I don't know where I knew bar or where I thought bars came from, but I didn't realize that bars were a pharmaceutical because of how they were screwing people up.
Right.
RIP to my boy Kenny, but you know, I remember my first time seeing someone on bars was my boy Kenny at school, fucked up in the hallways. Yo, I don't even remember what happened that day. I'm sure he ended up going home, something like that. I don't even remember. But the way that these pharmaceutical drugs, if you take just so much and they just, you lose it. You're done. You don't have any way of coming out of it. Nothing snaps you out of it. Like unless you got Narcan. But who's got Narcan? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's amazing to me how the people that are supposed to fix you can screw you up the most.
Yeah.
The people that you're supposed, that you, like, in America, you have to have insurance. You have to have insurance so that you can go to the doctor. The people that are supposed to fix you. So no matter what, you're paying a doctor, even if you don't use it. Because an insurance doctor or an insurance company, you know, they give money to the doctor, whatever. Okay, so you're paying for something that you're not, a lot of people don't use. You're paying people to fix your physical illnesses, mental as well. They're literally putting you on things that they know they probably should not. Mm-hmm. Why would you ever, like, why is Xanax a thing? I'm sorry. You want to know what would fix that? Probably an edible. I'm not kidding. And I understand. Look, especially postpartum, especially postpartum. Oh, my God. The anxiety that I had postpartum was so debilitating. I couldn't fucking do anything because my anxiety was so. I could be at work and just have like, just like couldn't breathe. Couldn't breathe because I was having anxiety. So like, I cured, I don't want to say I cured myself because obviously like I still smoke and I still do edibles and blah, blah, blah. I cook my own, you know, bake my own cookies, whatever, whatever. But like, I'm so much would rather edibles, cannabis,
yeah,
over something that could ruin my fucking life.
Well, that's you.
Take
you,
over my life.
I'll say this, and I mean, it doesn't work for everybody. Which, you know, it does.
Bullshit. Bullshit. They just ain't tried it.
Yeah.
No, I'm serious. Like, but there, I will. I hear what you're about to say. I'll bet you they tried smoking it, or I'll bet you they tried eating it. They didn't try the other. A lot of people don't realize that doing it in different ways, even going from cookies to gummies to smoking to dabs, like concentrates, like everything hits you very differently. Right. Everything hits you
and
very
different
differently.
Strains, right?
Different strains.
Right.
There's different
find the right strain,
different doses.
Right.
CBD can do something versus the THC and this and that. But I promise you they didn't try. They didn't exhaust all of the options the way that they would even in a pharmaceutical way.
Right.
Oh, this didn't work? Oh, okay, let's just up the dosage. Oh, that one didn't work? Now let's switch it to this one. So we're going to wean you off of this one while we're putting you on this one. Same thing.
Right.
Sorry, you're just going to, I mean, but guess what? You never have to wean off of weed. What? That's not like, you're doing that because of personal things, not because you have to. You don't, that like, there's people that need it to go out into the day. I totally, like, people that are like, oh, my God, they're addicted. No, y'all just crazy, and they don't know how to deal with y'all. I truly believe that I would rather hang out with someone that smokes cannabis versus someone that, like, just thinks weed is so horrible. And, I mean, obviously, because I know the benefits of it, but I don't know. Like, people go out into the day high probably because they got something wrong with them. They're socially anxious or awkward or... But you can fix that. You don't got to take pills, boo.
Yeah.
That's weird because you're falling asleep on me, mama. Like, I saw this, and it's crazy because I've been seeing a lot of videos of nurses falling asleep.
Yeah, yeah.
While charting and stuff.
Yeah. That's like, it's hitting
Can you imagine?
It's hitting them the heaviest because they got access.
Yeah.
They have access. It's right there.
I mean, and it's so easy because especially in small offices. I used to work in a small doctor's office. You, oh, my back hurts. And, oh, well, or are you coming in sneezing or coughing or your throat hurts? Oh, here's a Z-Pak.
Yeah.
Wait, you didn't even see me. You didn't even, we didn't even have a, that's, no. You just need a Z-Pak. And even though a Z-Pak is nothing, right, it's no opiate. Well, you complain long enough and you're close enough to a doctor, nurse practitioner, things like that. You just say my head hurt. Give me some T3.
More than that, though.
Give me my T3.
You got access.
Yeah, but I'd be too scared of that.
Or if you want to pay for it, or if you want to, like, you paying for it under the table. You running them scripts.
Yeah. So how does that work? Can you tell me how that works?
That's going.
What's our time? Yeah. What's our time?
I mean, we had an hour right now.
Yeah. So let's. Well. I mean, we're gonna discuss. This is like. I think
I
it's pretty.
I don't even really know, to be honest, but.
We're going to have to do our research on that.
Yeah, let's do our research. Let's figure that out.
How to run scripts, and we'll be back with another business plan for you guys. Want to make quick money? Want to make quick cash?
All right.
We've got the deal for you. Make $1,200 in 45 minutes. Kidding. I would never do that. I don't even know how to do it. All right. Anyways, again, I wanted to touch on this just because I think a lot of people don't do it based on experience. They do it based on what studies tell them. And I think your experience can shed light to some other people. And I really appreciate all your honesty and greatness. And I love you.
Oh,
he just yawned. He's not crying. My baby ain't no bitch. No, I'm just kidding. love you.
Love you too. Sorry, I'm trying to get this.
All right, well, in the damn thing. All right.
All right, we'll turn it up.
Thank you.
Then.
Thank you for listening to Canamon. Turn it up. Everything's wonderful. Okay. What song is this? Ooh, what song is this?
You don't like this song?
No, I love this song.
That's why I put it on.
Oh, you know me?
Mm-hmm.
Damn. All right, Travis. Okay, Travis, you back on my good side. Well, we'll excuse what happened.
This has been the Canamon Podcast, Episode 3, Tony Styles, at DJ Tony Styles, at Alexa the Great 713.
Where's that radio voice?
We out of here.
Thanks, babe.
You're welcome. Bye.